This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Melissa Idris. I've got Kusu Chuang and Julian Ng here with me. Ibrahim Sani is going to be speaking to Jason Low, the CEO of Tune Talk, on The Breakfast Grill today. That's coming up just after the 8 o'clock news. Now, Jason Low, of course, from the former fame of Fat Boys, that record label, also host of ATV and Hits FM announcer. But now he is the CEO of Tune Talk, a mobile virtual network operator that rides on the network of Cellcom. They've got the prefix 010 when you dial.
Oh, they are the ones, are they?
Yeah.
Ah, I see. Apparently, they got ARPUs of $16. That's not bad, actually, for a prepaid market. Yeah.
$16 is extremely good.
Apparently, the highest among prepaid brands.
Yeah. Right,
there you go. We'll find out more from Jason Low. Apparently, they've got 1.2 million active subscribers. Let's see how they can keep up this momentum. But let's take a look at the local business scene. Now, interesting comments coming out from a World Bank economist. He is saying that Malaysia should consider introducing conditional unemployment benefits to support the labour market. And he says this is better than the cash handouts like BRIM, which can become unsustainable.
Yeah, this is the World Bank guy who attended an Edge Financial Daily exclusive event called the Malaysia Economic Monitor and Open Data Project, co-hosted by the Penang Institute and the World Bank. So this guy is saying that instead of paying out BRIM and all these other things which cost the government about $6 billion a year, why not take a look at some unemployment benefits? For example, if you're fired or sacked from your job or get laid off or what's that thing, VSS or MSS?
VSS, MSS.
So the government should give you a few months of allowances to help you retrain and make yourself more endearing to the employing sector.
Yeah, this is very, very, very important because Malaysia does not have an institutionalized social welfare scheme. We've got helicopter money in the form of BRIM, and we've got, you know, periodic increases in government salaries and so on and so forth. But of course, as Rafael Munoz Moreno. He's arguing that these measures are actually quite expensive to the country.
But is it one or the other? Because, you know, BRIM helps a certain category of...
It's one-off, you see, and it goes in a flash.
But so is the unemployment assistance. Is this like the dole in the UK?
It's a bit like the dole, but I think this is like a cash transfer, a conditional cash transfer type of social protection. He's arguing that the scheme is contingent upon acquiring skills sought by the labour market. So, for example, if you're laid off and then the market, say, for example, needs a hairdresser, then you know you get some assistance.
to retrain to be a hairdresser,
for example.
Okay.
And then if you get those qualifications, then
I think it's helping two different segments of society, right? So it's a social safety net for sure, but BRIM is helping, for instance, the B40, whereas this job seekers allowance or however unemployment benefit that would serve a certain category, which is cyclical, or you know, in this time where you do see higher unemployment, then it's good for that, right?
I agree with you, Melissa, because I think that there is a certain segment of society who needs that kind of income to pull them through. I mean, we got this huge retirement sufficiency problem that is brewing in Malaysia like a time bomb, right? So this kind of thing actually ties them through. But this is not to say that the people who are able-bodied should get this kind of benefit as well. I mean, they should be training the skills so that they can get gainfully employed. But what if there are not enough jobs to go around?
I think we are underestimating the scale of the problem. And, you know, I think the government, give them some credit because they are recognizing the severity. If you look at it, the narrative from the government has been spreading beyond the B40 to the M40 as well.
Right.
You know, the middle class 40 up to, I think, 7,000 ringgit per month combined household income. These guys are losing their jobs as well in oil and gas and retail and manufacturing and financial services. And these guys are pretty skilled guys. And they are just keeping their heads above water, you know. And we've seen, you know, negative rates impacting EPF returns. we've seen Dato' Cheryl come out and say, like, you know, we can't expect the same kind of returns in the past. And we've got something like half the EPF's income coming from fixed income instruments.
Dato' Cheryl also said that you need a kind of income policy, national income policy, to supplement the EPF contributions. And this kind
that,
of
yeah.
income policy is reflected by what we see here in BRIMS and minimum wage and so on, which I guess Moreno is complaining about, that this will cost the government a lot of money.
Yes.
And I think that we have to either not dismiss this or to put our undivided support for the BRIM project, right?
Yeah.
I don't know whether... we don't have enough information right now as to whether this is the greatest thing that has happened to us.
Since
because
sliced bread,
since sliced bread. Because no. 6 billion ringgit is not a lot of money in the small scheme of things. And the other point that this World Bank guy also mentioned is that there's too much emphasis given to civil servant salary as well, raising, giving them bonuses and raising the salaries. And now I'm not sure if this is the right or wrong thing to do, because I guess they're not very well paid as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are other considerations when it comes to the civil service as well, right? I mean, we've often spoken about is the bureaucracy bloated? Do we need to trim down? But, you know, it is, there are political considerations as well when it comes to that.
Notwithstanding the political expediency, but, you know, but the M40s and the B40s are 80% of the working population, in fact, the population of the country, and it's spreading, so.
I have to ask, though, I mean, with unemployment benefits, right? Is there an opportunity for abuse with this? Because sometimes, you know, you hear anecdotal evidence of other countries, you hear of the beach bums who don't want to work and just collect unemployment benefits and sit, you know, and surf, the surfer dudes. Or I know these are cases that are not, I mean, I'm generalizing here, but are we worried that this could be
I think those are
exploited?
I think those are mainly
justified,
the exceptions rather than rules. Because
okay.
I think given the chance, and I'm pulling numbers out of the air here, 70 to 80% of people would rather have a fulfilling job than bum around. Don't you think?
Well, no. Au contraire, actually. I know a lot of people
70
would
to
80 rather just...
I mean, you would get that 10, 20% people who bum around so that that system can
that allowable
actually...
Give,
yeah, that you make provisions for leakages of the system. And what better way to leak it than to the people, right? I mean, 10, 20% leakage is fine.
I think it should...
Yeah, okay. I see what you're trying to get at.
I think there should be a cutoff point.
200-300 billion being leaked out into corruption, I guess.
Yeah, because ultimately people have got bills to pay, and however you can get it, you want the system to stay afloat, because we're entering a very, very tough time now.
Yeah, this could be something to help tide people over, right, until they they weather through these tough times. But also, the average expatriate who works in Malaysia also facing tough times, because he or she now gets the lowest payment package in Asia Pacific, lower than his or her peers in Sri Lanka and Pakistan. This is because the value of what Malaysian employers pay has slipped in the face of a weaker ringgit.
You know, when I saw the story, my heart just went out to the poor expat worker, because, I mean, his deal now for middle manager is only $176,000 a year, which is only 730,000 ringgit.
Okay, but Chuan, to be fair,
you know, my heart just bled
there are implications for our overall earning capabilities, right?
Correct.
If your expats can't earn enough, what hope is there for the rest of us,
correct.
Right?
Because, yeah.
But, you know, this is a survey that's being done by ECA International, which is a firm that provides information and solutions for employees management. And they say that there are some mitigating factors for Malaysia. For example, the low package reflects how cheap Malaysia is as a location.
Yes, you get quality of life. I mean, you know, you may not be earning.
I don't know about quality
of
life.
But you can get a lot more for your money than elsewhere, right?
Buck.
You
yeah.
could
yeah,
get, you know, yeah. a maid, a driver, a nice apartment. That's good living. You would work, you stay in your home country. You're not going to get those kinds of privileges.
Yeah, but if you go by the textbook definition, you do not want to be, you know, middle income and low wage. You know, you don't want to be that. You want to be constantly seeing price inflation like the likes of Singapore, Tokyo, London, New York.
Well, Malaysia has had very big price inflation as well because of how the ringgit has been whacked. And if you're an expat, you would be having a kind of lifestyle where you import a lot of stuff. So you would have been whacked by that huge fall in the ringgit value. But the other thing that Malaysia actually lost out a lot on is on taxes, because the average tax is a lot higher than other places like Singapore or Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that... in Japan, which is the best package in Asia Pacific, as well as Hong Kong,
really?
And Singapore.
Japan
yeah. actually, they have pretty low tax rates.
I think something like $3.5 million US dollars a year, but. But Malaysia's got to widen the tax net, and I think, you know, we might, I don't know, who knows, right? Budget 2017,
maybe. I was maybe just about to say, you took the words right out of my mouth.
Budget 2017.
Maybe one less taxes points. And more benefits. How does that work, right?
But can the country afford it, though?
Can they afford it? So they got to, like, try to take out revenue from elsewhere. For example, I think that I'm going to sound like a broken record here, but corruption, we got to really get rid of corruption, because that's a big mining ground for a lot of money.
You can never say it too often, Jules. You can never.
Exactly.
7:57 right now, CIMB Principal Islamic Asset Management, they have obtained approval from the Central Bank of Ireland to launch its global Sukuk UCITS or UCITS fund. UCITS stands for Undertakings for Collective Investments in Transferable Securities. This is in fact Malaysia's first global Sukuk fund under UCITS fund structure.
Yeah, I think it's a great thing because it raises the profile of Malaysia, and it also raises the profile of Sukuk instruments. The UCITS function is actually quite nifty. It allows you to sell across the European Union. It's kind of like a passport, right? So once you get UCITS approval, which stands for Undertakings for Collective Investment in Transferable Securities, once you get that approval, then you can have that passport to sell all across the EU.
Well, exactly, to the Europeans who have lots of money but nowhere to put it, because over there you're going to get negative rates, right? You know,
and all of them are hunting for yield, right?
And all of them are hunting for yield.
Very
right?
smart.
So, yeah.
There you go. 7:58 right now. We've got the news bulletin coming up in just a couple of minutes. After that, the Breakfast Grill. Ibrahim Saini speaks to Jason Lowe, CEO of TuneTalk. So make sure you stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.